Your SteveJonesShow.com audio is loading. SteveJonesShow.com audio is sponsored by Rick Weibel at REW Insurance and Financial Services, LLC. Call them at 800-609-9484 or visit them online at rewfinancial.com.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back. Second hour of the show here on WKOK. Great to have you with us on this Thursday. And we're here at the Chateau. Yes, the Sunbury Motor Studio, 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in beautiful Hummel's Wharf, home of what we believe should be a USFL franchise. Also, today's show being brought to you by Rick Weibel at REW Insurance and Financial Services, LLC. People often ask, Kevin, you're with the Bucknell Radio Network, you broadcast Shikellamy football, you're on the Steve Jones Show. What do you do with your own personal fortune? He always goes to Rick Weibel at REW Insurance and Financial Services, LLC. Kevin called right away at 800-609-9484. Then eventually he visited online at rewfinancial.com.
I did all that.
No surprise whatsoever to this veteran campaigner. Someone who is definitely a veteran campaigner and a guy, he puts up a column. I read it right away. One of my favorites, known him for, I don't know, at least 25 years. Ron Cook, Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Cookie, how are you?
I'm doing great, Steve. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
It's great to hear from you. First of all, I want to get to something that I'm sure in the month of May over the last 19, 20 years we haven't talked too much about, but doggone Pirates, their pitching is such where they've kept them in this doggone thing, haven't they?
Yeah, the pitching's been outstanding, but, Steve, the hitting has just been atrocious. And they're probably lucky to be 17-19. They just have nobody that can hit the ball out of the park. The guys they brought in the offseason, Clint Barmas, Rod Barajas, Casey McGee, Nate McLaughlin, have just been awful. And yet the pitching has kept them in it. They've been very surprised. The starting rotation has been outstanding. They went into the game last night with the second-best earned run average as a staff in the National League. And the rotation has been good. The bullpen has been even better. And if you like 1-0, 2-1 games, the Pirates are for you. You're not going to see many 10-8 games from them.
No question about that. And the other part about this, too, is that it's not just the hitting. But they're only .275 in on-base percentage. I mean, they are not even seeing the ball well enough to get on base and understand that a walk is as good as a hit.
No, you're right. They are by far the fewest runs scored in all of baseball. I mean, I throw out the American League with the DH, but the fewest by far in the National League. They were either 15th or 16th. 16th is dead last in batting average, on-base percentage, runs, slugging percentage. All the way across the board, it's been abysmal. And I mean, everybody's screaming for them to bring in a hitter, but trades just aren't made much in May. And Neil Huntington, the general manager, is reluctant to really give up some of his good young pitchers. And I don't blame him. I don't know that the Pirates are going to win again this year, but you like to think when these young pitchers have a chance to really be one and two guys in the rotation, there's Kip Hunter and Jamison Tyon, and also Garrett Cole, the number one pick last year. They just think are can't-miss guys. Well, nobody's can't-miss, but I don't advocate trading away one of your elite pitchers for a bat that just may or may not really help you. I think they need more than one bat.
Right. Agree with that. What's interesting is that when it comes to people viewing, I guess the Penguins were number one on NHL, NBA teams in winter ratings. The passion in the city for sports, have you seen it any higher than it is now in terms of that pure passion that you see between Steelers, Penguins, everybody else?
Yeah, well, it is the Steelers, Penguins, and everybody else. I mean, it used to be good in the 70s when the Steelers were winning, the Pirates were winning championships. The Steelers still own this town by far. Then the Penguins have created just a great spot for themselves. You're right, they've let all NHL markets in the United States with local TV ratings the last 3 years, but this is the first time they beat out every NBA market as well. It's a remarkable achievement to the organization. They do a great job of promoting the sport. They've had an unbelievable streak of sellouts at Old Mellon Arena and now at the new Consol Energy Center. And I don't know, they've been so lucky here, Steve, to be not only have competitive teams, but to have star power. Really, you can argue they've had the best player in the league since 1984. I mean, go back to Lemieux, and then Jaromir Jagr, and now Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin. They not only win, but they have star power, and that's a nice combination.
Yeah, that's a great combination to have. Yet the bottom line is it's still going to be a Steeler town. How did you feel about the way the Steelers drafted?
Drafted?
Yeah, drafted.
Oh, I thought they drafted excellent. I mean, everybody just raves about this lineman they got from Stanford, Dennis DeCastro. I guess guards aren't quite as highly regarded as tackles or centers, but they feel like they got a guy for the next 10 or 12 years. And they got the big kid Adams from Ohio State, who has had some character issues. They had him even off their board, and he actually requested a meeting with them and came and faced Mike Tomlin, Kevin Colbert, eye to eye, and said, hey, listen, give me a chance, and he convinced them to do it. They feel like with those two, Marquise Pouncey, who's been to the Pro Bowl his first 2 years in the league, and Marcus Gilbert, their number two pick last year at offensive tackle, they feel like they got four-fifths of their offensive line for the next decade. And obviously, I think it's important to beef up that position because you got $100 million invested in the quarterback, and they want to keep him standing.
And they need to keep him standing because he's going to be the key to whatever they've done. He may have been in a management position for the first Super Bowl win, but he was a primetime position the second time they won under him.
Oh, absolutely. The drive at the end of the game to beat Arizona, the pass to Santonio Holmes. I mean, Ben Roethlisberger is a fabulous quarterback, and he can play for me any day of the week. And he has his critics here. He's had a little bit of a past, obviously. Didn't play so well in Denver at the playoff game last year. Didn't play as well as he needed to, I guess. But to me, he's just a big-time quarterback and a big-time winner.
Yep, no question. Complete agreement with you on that. The Pitt situation now with the ACC, obviously West Virginia was able to, threats and negotiation, get itself to the Big 12 to start on July 1st. Pitt won't be able to do that at least July 1st of this year, but they're trying for July 1 of next year. In the end, what can the ACC mean to Pitt and the stability for the entire athletic department?
Well, you just used the word stability. I mean, I've long been a critic of the Big East from a football standpoint, Steve, and I'm not just saying this because I'm speaking to a Penn State audience, but to me, there's never been a Big East football league without Penn State in it. It's been a secondary, second-rate league, in my opinion. And it was just falling apart. You know, the basketball schools wanted to do one thing. The football schools wanted to do another. Pitt had to land somewhere. I think it landed in a pretty good spot. They just signed a big TV deal. It's going to mean a lot of money to Pitt, a lot more money to Pitt. I don't think the ACC is as comparable to the Big Ten, SEC, Pac-12, Big 12, but it's certainly better than the Big East, and I think it's a great spot for Pitt. I still wish they and Penn State were in the same league. My preference, obviously, would have been Pitt to go to the Big Ten, but I don't think the Big Ten offered any kind of an invitation, so Pitt is in a much better spot than it was. Hopefully, it'll be full go there, as you said, in July of 13, and I think it will be.
Yeah, I think eventually it will be, too. It's just going to take work on both sides to make it happen. I think West Virginia is the one that opened the door and the model to make it happen. At least Pitt has that model to work with.
Well, they also came up with $20 million to get out of it, and I don't know that Pitt wants to do that, but we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see about that. Bill O'Brien, when he was just in Pittsburgh on Monday night, opened the door to – Pitt and Penn State are supposed to be playing in football in, 16 and 17, I think.
16 and 17. Yeah. I think not supposed to. I think they're booked for it.
Yeah, 16 and 17 they're supposed to play. But he's left the door open to the possibility of playing far more often than that. In your opinion, how important is that to have that door open and the possibility of making it happen on a permanent basis?
Well, Well, I think it's up to Penn State, really. I mean, if Penn State is willing to play them 1-1, and I think that Pitt should settle for nothing less than that, I think Pitt would sign to play forever right now. Certainly you can argue that it would benefit Pitt a lot more than it would benefit Penn State. You're going to get 105,000 up there no matter what. It would be a real big drawing card for Pitt here. I'm old enough, Steve, as you are, to remember the great Pitt-Penn State games of the past, and I've certainly missed them tremendously. I hope it comes back and plays every year, but I think the bottom line is going to be Penn State's call if they're willing to do it, because I know for a fact Pitt absolutely wants to do it.
From 74 to 83, I don't think there was a more intense rivalry. You can talk Ohio State, Michigan all you want. You can talk Auburn, Alabama all you want. But from 74 to 83, I thought in terms of pure intensity, Penn State and Pitt was the single most intense series in the country.
It was just fabulous. And, I mean, I like to think it could get back to that point again. I don't know how important is it at your end of a part of the state. I think it's very important here, and I always use this. I see you at a lot of Penn State games. They'll announce the score, Syracuse 22, Pitt 10, and there's not even a murmur in the Beaver Stadium seat. If they say Temple 15, Penn State 14, it goes crazy at the Pitt games. I mean, I think there's a lot of jealousy towards Penn State from Pitt fans, obviously over the years with Paterno and the great turnout you get there. I think it would mean a whole lot to Pitt fans, and I hope the Penn State fans would jump on board with it as well.
Yeah, it would be nice, no question, nice to see. The other part, too, is the one thing that has to be factored in is that the Big Ten has that agreement now with the Pac-12 that starts in 2017.
Right.
So that means there's going to be three openings on the schedule, but that's still three opportunities to make it happen. And I thought Bill O'Brien's words in this area, I found to be encouraging in terms of the future of the series.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, everybody knows that Joe Paterno was really not gung-ho about playing Pitt. And, you know, whether it goes back to the bitterness of the early 80s, who knows. But I think Bill O'Brien has opened the door, and I think it's a good thing. And Steve, I can tell you, you know, he's 0-0 right now. Wait till he loses a game, we'll see. But the reaction to him, at least in Pittsburgh, has been outstanding. I think everybody has appreciated the way he's approached a very, very difficult situation. I think they like the impression he made here the other night. I think everybody seems to slowly be getting behind this guy, including former Penn State players. I've talked, you remember when he first was hired, we're not going to support the program. He's not a Penn State guy. I think he's worked a little bit each day to chip away at that and earn respect. Now, clearly, it's going to come down to what he does on the field in September and October and November. But I think he's off to a fabulous start, at least here in Pittsburgh.
Look, from January 6th when he was hired to now the day we do this, there's no handbook on how you're supposed to handle what has happened.
No.
There's no handbook. But I think what has happened is that if you were to write a handbook, how he's ad-libbed his way through this would probably be the handbook to do it. And he's had to really do it, you know, himself.
Oh, there's no question. I mean, Tom Bradley was in the same situation last year when he took over. It's just an unprecedented situation brought about by some of the most horrific circumstances. And I thought Bradley did a fabulous job, and it looks like Bill O'Brien is off to a real nice start. But I always factor in 0-0. You know, let's see what he does on the field.
And you know what? Even he says that. He always says to me,
yep,
Steve, I haven't won a game yet. He always says,
yep,
that to me. He's well aware of that. Ron, thanks so much for the time you gave us. Appreciate it. Can't wait to talk to you again. Can't wait to see you again.
Steve, anytime you need me, man, you just pick up the phone. I'll be there for you. My pleasure.
All right, Ron Cook. Cookie, good to hear from you. He's one of the great guys. He speaks highly of you, by the way, Kevin. Always does.
That's great. That's great. I like what he said, though, about the Steelers' offensive line and the drafts that they made. I was a little concerned about the Adams draft, and I'm glad that they kind of met with him a little bit, and that makes me feel better about that pick.
Well,
if you remember, I said I was very uncomfortable with that pick, that particular pick.
Yeah, but Adams went to see them.
Right.
he wanted, because what happened was, is that the Steelers, I can tell you what happened because I know enough people with the Steelers, and they told me what happened. What happened was they took him off the board, and his agent got word that the Steelers had taken him off the board because for a long period of time there had been talk that the Steelers would actually make him the first-round pick. A lot of mock drafts had him as the first-round pick of the Steelers.
Absolutely.
They took him off the board. Well, when his agent found out they took him off the board, what happened was that Adams himself told his agent. His agent did not tell him to do this. Adams did this himself. And he said, look, I'm going to go talk to him myself. They said, look, and his agent says, I'm not so sure you should do that. Actually, that was the advice he got. He said, no, I have to. I have to go talk to them myself. He drove in there himself, sat down with the Steelers, told them who he is, what he is, promised them certain things, which now he's going to have to keep, which is important. But he went in as a man and told them what he did wrong, why he did it wrong, why he's learned from it, and why he's going to be a solid football player for them. And they bought it.
Well, I do like the initiative. I love the initiative part of it more than anything. The fact that he came in and wanted the meeting and not the Steelers calling him for the meeting. That makes you feel a little bit better that maybe he realizes that, you know, everybody sees him as a wild card and he needs to get himself under control.
Well, your finances are under control because of Rick Weibel at REW Insurance and Financial Services, LLC. Call 800-609-9484 or visit online at rewfinancial.com. Back with more of the Steve Jones Show on WKOK after this.
Hi, I'm Rick Weibel from REW Financial. I strive to take an eagle-eye approach to your financial future to help give you the freedom to make powerful decisions. I work with you to help you find the discipline you need to get the results you want. I don't believe in just setting it up and letting things go. I'll always be looking to see how we can make things better. REW Financial is an independent company committed to the highest standards of integrity, ethics, and value throughout your financial journey. See us in Lewisburg and Brook Park Farm. Call 800-609-9484 or visit us online at rewfinancial.com.
Welcome back. Chateau, Sunbury Motors Studio, 4th Street in Sunbury is where you'll find Sunbury Motors or Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Home of what we think should be a USFL franchise. No surprise, this veteran campaigner. Also being brought to you by Rick Weibel at REW Insurance and Financial Services, LLC. Call Rick at 800-609-9484 or visit online at rewfinancial.com. We'd like to thank Dana O'Neill, ESPN.com. She joined us from 3:30 to 4. And also, in our opening segment here, Ron Cook of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Strong hour for you.
I got a quick question for you. Last night's Sixers game.
The answer is no. All right, so.
All right, that answers that then.
Okay, let's go to what I want to talk about now.
Last night's Sixers game. Yeah. Not really a stellar defensive performance from the Sixers. Is that the type of defense that we expect from the Sixers on a regular basis? Or was that just, you know, Boston stepping it up a little bit?
That's the Celtics taking them lightly in game two and then suddenly stepping it up. The Celtics are the better team between the two. They just have better balance all the way through than the Sixers have. And the Sixers don't match up well with Kevin Garnett. And Garnett may be playing some of the best basketball of his career right now. Paul Pierce is not the Paul Pierce who was the NBA Finals MVP of 2008, but he's still very effective. Ray Allen isn't quite the Ray Allen that we've seen over the years. Rajon Rondo's just getting better all the time. But Garnett, for whatever reason, since they installed him at the five spot and started him in the five spot, he has thrived over the last 5 or 6 weeks. And he is a very tough matchup for anybody. And the Celtics also have the ability, when Pierce isn't going well, Pierce will take it to the hole. That's important because teams that play downhill get to the free throw line and get free points. That's where Oklahoma City completely fouled up last night, and that's why they had to struggle before they finally beat the Lakers. Oklahoma City kept settling for jump shots last night. They weren't playing downhill. They weren't getting to the free throw line. And they're a turnover-prone team to begin with. They're actually one of the leaders in turnovers, believe it or not, in the NBA. But you look at the Sixers. You know, the Sixers struggled last night with what the Celtics. First of all, the Sixers struggle to score. Let's start with that premise.
Well, so they've been struggling to score.
Yeah, they have to keep the score down to win. And that's the issue they have with the Celtics. I mean, and the Celtics are in a position now where if they win tomorrow night, they'll go back to Boston, they'll close this thing out, and then they'll move on. Now, a lot of people are asking about LeBron James in Miami, and LeBron, of course, not getting the shot at the end. Kobe didn't even take the last shot last night for the Lakers. Steve Blake did, and he's looking at Meta World Peace. He's like, world peace right now, not in favor. But Blake was wide open. He just flat out missed the shot. But, you know, for LeBron James, the issue he has right now is that with Chris Bosh out, James has had to play the four spot. A lot is placed on him because he's a star, but I'll be frank with you. I think James has done everything you can ask him to do so far in the Indiana series. There are other people that need to step up. You know, other people on that team happen to be professional basketball players. They can take shots, you know. They can make plays.
And there's some talent on that team.
Yeah, this is not a team totally devoid of talent. But then again, you know what? Led by Danny Granger, Indiana is also a team that is not totally devoid of talent. They're actually very good. All right, bottom of the hour news on WKOK, then another half hour of Sterling Talk on the Steve Jones Show.
Sports Talk, where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back. Final half hour of the show, and it's been a fun show today. Danny O'Neill joined us from 3:30 to 4 the entire half hour from ESPN.com. We talked a lot of college basketball. Last half hour, we had Ron Cook on from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. I thought Dana just gave such a strong endorsement of Patrick Chambers when we talked basketball. And Ron gave a strong endorsement of Bill O'Brien and what he's done so far. Look, the bottom line is, what Bill O'Brien has dealt with so far from January 6th to this point, there is no handbook for it. Right? There's no handbook for it. And I can relate to it firsthand. After going through the Nebraska pregame show, the Ohio State pregame show, the Wisconsin pregame show, and the Houston pregame show, there's no handbook on how to do and how to handle that situation where everything around you is on fire. And he is, to Bill O'Brien's credit, he has stepped in. He's been able to really, with his own instincts, and it really is his instincts, been able to just go through and handle this thing, I think, as well as you can possibly handle it. So, you know, and Ron and I talked about that as well. It also was a strong Kevin Herr hour. In fact, I'm getting emails left and right saying they think that may have been the best hour you've had on the show.
It may have been, yeah. It may have been.
I mean, God, boy, the fans love you. Oh, man, they do. Now, I want to go back again to the email I received and revisit it that we talked about in the first half hour of the show.
Okay.
Oh, come on. You act like it's such
dread. No. I'm just saying, okay.
Jack and Maria sent an email to me at stevejonesshow@wkok.com. They talked about the things in the show that they love. That it's never too early or late to discuss Penn State football. They're absolutely right about that. The personal stories, and we're coming up with something. You and I are coming up with a little thing for Memorial Day that I think is going to be very interesting. And by the way, this portion of our show being brought to you by Rick Weibel at REW Insurance and Financial Services, LLC. Call 800-609-9484 or visit online at rewfinancial.com. We're here at the Sunbury Motors Studio, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, and also Sunbury Motors Kia, located at Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. The first part of although I found number 4 to be very intriguing.
I'm sure you did. I think we discussed that before, so you can go ahead and move on to 3 again.
Well, no, now I brought it up. Fans are saying, oh, what's number 4? Kevin deserves all the abuse he gets. Okay. All right, now we go back to number 1.
Moving back.
Star system for recruits. Okay. Jack and Maria wrote in their email to me that, you know, and they don't, they listen to the show all the time, but they can't call, they're at work. So, I mean, you know, I can't stand when commerce gets in the way of people calling this show.
The economy. You know, you got to keep the economy moving.
I understand. I understand. You know, really. Can't you just call quiet? Hi, Steve. I'm at work. Yeah.
I can't talk real loud.
Did I ever tell you that story? Lewistown?
I don't think so.
This is years ago. High school football. Friend of mine's broadcasting a game, and I'll get to their email point on the star system in a second. Friend of mine is broadcasting a game at Mitchell Field in Lewistown. And a guy walks up to him in the pregame show, and he's doing the pregame show, and he leans over and whispers, "You're off the air." "What?" "You're off the air." "I'm off the air?" "Yes." "Well, if I'm off the air, why are you whispering?" "All right." Star system.
Did they have any? The question I have though with that field is: did they have any grass on it when they were playing football?
It was early in the season.
Wow! I'll tell you what. I've never seen a football field take more abuse than that one does, and I've done a few games out of Lewistown.
Yeah. Well, that's because both teams use it.
Yep, exactly right.
Now,
and it's usually by
now.
October. Yeah, at that point it was October that Indian Valley and Lewistown were both playing, and by that point there was very little grass in the middle of that field.
Well, if you notice what they did at the old Meadowlands and now at MetLife Stadium, they put field turf in because they had grass in for a long period of time. But between the Jets and the Giants, that stadium was in use every single week.
You know, and that's been the big discussion going back now to Pittsburgh. You know, there's another stadium that has had a
Heinz
lot of field, trouble with
Heinz
grass.
Field should be field turf.
Yeah.
All right. And I am a person that is so, I mean, when it comes to playing football, I am so. I love the fact when games are on grass, okay?
I agree.
Do. Okay, absolutely. But there are certain cases where you have to have field turf because it just doesn't happen in that stadium. Michigan was one of them. I mean, I know Michigan's a world-renowned university, but I can tell you right now, they don't know how to grow grass. Ohio State, okay? That field was coming up in clumps all the time, and they never had it cut right. Never. They went to field turf. Iowa, they went to field turf. Those are three places that had to, Kevin, had to. Because for some reason, those world-renowned universities couldn't grow any grass.
Well, and,
all right?
And if you look at the games they're playing in Heinz Field, they're playing sometimes Friday night high school games in there during the playoff season. Pitt's
W-P-I-A-L.
Playing there. Yep. Pitt's playing games there. Then the Steelers play games there. I mean, but that's 3 days without really any time to actually repair the field, to even replace what has been dug up. And I think that's part of the problem. They want to use that field, and that's great, but it doesn't lend itself to grass then if you're going to use that field three times in 3 days.
And all the time here at Beaver Stadium, they bring up, well, they just use it for football. They just use it for football. Why is this field immaculate?
Because they just use it for
football. Yes. How about that? Hey.
And I'm not now. I'm not saying I like that idea. I love the fact that multi-use stadiums and multi-uses for fields, but you can't do that with a grass field.
No, you can't do it with a grass field.
Okay, sorry, now, I got you off on a tangent there.
Right,
sorry.
I wouldn't mind if they had a concert a year in here, but I'll tell you what, concerts tear up fields.
I never believed that until I saw it physically. Mm-hmm. I get it now.
Yep. I mean, that wouldn't bother me if they did it once a year, but again, there has to be a recovery time before you start playing football on it again. Beaver Stadium is immaculate. It is the single finest grass football field I have ever seen anywhere. And I have been many, many places in my career. Many places. It doesn't get better than that. It has the speed and feel of AstroTurf field turf, but it's grass. Now, back to what they said about the star system. They said they agreed, and I talked about this in the first half hour, they agreed that the star system is overblown, but it gives those of us who are not recruit geeks a gauge as to their ability and potential. That's a very good point, and I agree with that point. Most of us understand that there will be many who will fall short of the hype. You can see the realism here. As well as those who, like Jack Ham, which I pointed out the other day, that will surprise the experts. Dion Butler's another one I brought up. I guess the rankings give us something to root for. True. We all agree that the interest from other schools is a much better predictor. And I brought that up the other day. And the reason I brought that up is that I'll look at that. Now, for me personally, I don't start talking about players till I actually see them. And that's how I go by. I don't really like to read about them. I don't like to get any preconceived notions about them. That when they show up in a camp in front of me, I can see what they can and can't do, at least initially. And then I watch to see if they improve or plateau. So that's always been the gauge, Kevin, I've used, is that I really don't talk much about recruits because I personally have not seen them. I can't say to you, I'll tell you right now, he is the seventh best defensive end of the country. How the heck do I know? Right? But how is he going to fit in to what Penn State wants to do, into Penn State system? You know, is he a linebacker that fits in perfectly with what Ted Roof wants to do defensively? That's what I'll look at when I actually see them in front of me. All right, and there are certain guys that you can see right away just have it. Now, they may not play right away, but you can see they have it. Deion Barnes was a guy, first week I watched him. Now, I don't want to just go in and watch one practice and say, hey, he's got it. Now, I want to get a good gauge about a week, 10 days, get a feel if there's some level of consistency as to what they're doing. Because like any time, they'll have ups and downs. Deion Barnes was a guy you looked at in the first 10 days of camp. You said to yourself, this guy is a football player. He can play. There are a couple other guys that fell into that category. I thought Kyle Carter was a guy that I watched all last season that nobody heard about. And I think you're going to hear about him now because he'll be one of those tight ends, those four rotating tight ends that Bill O'Brien will have. Kyle Carter is going to be a really good football player, I think. I think he has a chance that, you know, that he'll get better and better and better, especially once he gets a real handle on the system because he has the physical tools and he has very good hands and his footwork is very good. Donovan Smith, offensive lineman. I think he'll compete for a tackle spot. Good footwork. Excellent extension with his arms. And he has long arms. A big man to begin with. But his footwork and his arm extension is really good. I mean, those are the things I'm looking for. So my perspective is going to be different. Now, for the fans, and as Jack and Maria point out in their email, the star system gives them a gauge as to, on a national scene, or even within the conference, at least what the perception is of how well they're doing in recruiting. So that I completely understand.
Now, how do recruiters, and I'm sorry to cut you off there, but I want to go on that. I understand your point of view, and I get the fans' point of view, too, in that. But how do guys that are going out and doing the recruiting, how do they go about evaluating these guys? And they're not going to be able to see every single one of the guys at these positions,
Kevin,
too.
They don't see any of them. They don't see any of them.
I mean, right. DVDs, but they're always the best plays. I mean, if you're going to do a DVD, you're going to make sure it's your best plays, not your worst ones.
I understand that. And that's what you... We're going to have somebody on, and we'll have Mark Brennan on from Fight on State. We'll try and get Mark on next week at some point to talk about how they go about getting evaluations. Because when they sit there and they rank the top 150 players in the country, how do you know that this guy is 130 and that guy is 70? How the heck do you know that? I mean, unless you actually see them. I have to actually see them in front of me before I start making evaluations about players. Right, and then I'll talk to the coaches and I'll ask them what they see in them and what they don't see in them at a particular point.
And that's where I wondered, how do guys like Larry Johnson go out and make that decision? And this is the guy we should recruit, this is the guy we shouldn't.
They sit down in a meeting, for example, all right? And they will rack up at some point, they'll throw up on there DVDs. And they'll take a look at DVDs of guys. And plus they have contacts that they'll talk with and discuss these things with and talk to the high school coaches and get a feel for it. But then they'll put it up there, and they'll try to get a consensus in the room and say, okay, I just threw up the top 10 tight ends. Let's pick that. That's the popular position right now at Penn State to talk about the tight end. Right? If they can get a consensus from three or four guys in the room that they think that that's the top guy, that's the second guy, that's the third guy, you're doing really well. Because, look, just like anybody else,
everybody will have a different opinion on what they see and what they're looking at. There's rarely a consensus where everybody in the room, all 10 guys, go, hey, yeah, that's it. He's first. Well, I mean, and that's what they'll do in a staff meeting. They'll put down targets that they're looking at, and then they'll rack it up there because they'll get DVDs on everybody, and they will take a look and at least get a feel. And, of course, there are also these camps. Penn State has camps coming up in June. They start, you know, kids get involved in these camps, and it gives them a firsthand feel where they see them in front of them. And that Penn State camp over the years has been absolutely invaluable in helping them to target which guys fit exactly what they want to do. And it also gives them some personal contact because you have to understand who's a competitor. What kind of attitude do they have? What do they bring to the table? Are they a leader? Are they a follower? Those are all other things that you have to take a look at beyond what you see when you rack up a tape.
See, and that's a great point because, as I said, those DVDs are going to be the best parts. It's like when I auditioned to be your partner in this show. You know, you listen to the audio, you heard all the best stuff that I've ever done, and now you realize, wow, this is a lot better deal than I thought it was. This guy's a lot better than he was originally. So, you know, you got to remember that you're always seeing the best parts. You don't know if that's actually what you're getting or not.
Final segment of the show coming up in a moment. Today's show being brought to you by Rick Weibel. Well, of all the people I've talked about in the show, Rick's the one I trust the most. At REW Insurance and Financial Services, LLC, call 800-609-9484 or visit online at rewfinancial.com. We will revisit your last statement in a moment on WKOK.
Sunbury Motors in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza is having their Memorial Day sales event. Choose from over 250 new Fords with discounts up to $10,000. Pick from 25 Ford Fusions, slash to as low as $18,925. The 40 MPG Ford Focus is reduced to $15,430. Sunbury Motors has truckloads of new F-150s arriving daily. Pick from over 70 with savings up to $7,000. This is why Sunbury Motors has been the number one selling F-150 dealer in the entire Philadelphia region 3 years running. Choose from over 45 of the top selling Escapes, and they start as low as $18,400. 0% financing is available on most models, and every new vehicle from SMC comes with an extra set of tires. Plus, with the first 100 new vehicles purchased, you'll receive a chance to win a 2012 Mustang convertible to benefit the Sunbury Fire Department. SMC in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury. And at sunburymotors.com. Proudly serving the Susquehanna Valley for almost a century. Sale ends May 31st.
Welcome back to the show. And of course, the sad news of the day was Donna Summer passing away at the age of 63, battling cancer. Kevin actually saw her perform God Bless America at the Game 2 of the 2004 World Series. She was outstanding. Brought her out at the seventh inning stretch, and she performed that. In fact, was probably maybe about 30, 40 feet away from me, and did a marvelous job because she has a Boston background. And so sad, very, very sad news. She had battled cancer. She had really tried to keep the extent of her illness quiet as much as possible, but she won the Grammy 5 times in her career. And in the 70s, Last Dance, Hot Stuff, Bad Girls, all the hits that she had, and it carved out a nice niche for her in the disco era, passed away today at the age of 63, a long battle with cancer.
Also, some sad news for IndyCar fans, not quite as tragic as Donna Summer, but Jim Nabors will not be singing back home again in Indiana. He's done it for almost 40 years. He's sung Back Home Again in Indiana, but heart surgery preventing him from doing it, said in released in a statement that he was really disappointed, but is looking forward to being back with his family of Indy 500 fans in 2013. And I'm hoping they use a recording and they don't have somebody else do it. That's just me. I like the tradition there.
All right. No, it's a great tradition. Great tradition. And the fans always respond so well when they hear Jim Nabors performing Back Home Again in Indiana, and hopefully they will use your suggestion and do exactly that.
Well, the rumor is, according to the Indianapolis Star, that they were going to record him singing in Hawaii probably last week, and they were going to use that So it's actually going to be even a fresh recording. So that's a really good idea. I hope that happened.
Hope so, too. All right. Couple of other notes that we'll get everybody up to date with. First of all, Drew Brees, he says that the talks with the Saints are frustrating. Image-wise, they need to sign him. Right now, they need something. He is the face of that franchise right now, and he is the face of stability in the franchise right now. They need to do something there to make sure that they keep him in the fold.
In the last 4 months, you know what's positive come out of that team? Nothing.
That's right. Nothing positive.
Nothing. And you're absolutely right. That's the one thing they can do to at least help right the ship a little bit.
No question. So that is going to be something they're going to have to solve. The Roger Clemens trial continues. Brian McNamee concedes an early lie in all this. He is the chief prosecution witness against Roger Clemens. And it was he conceded that he lied about his involvement with steroids. Clemens lawyer Rusty Hardin said to McNamee, "It was a lie, wasn't it?" And McNamee said, "Yes." McNamee said he lied both out of self-preservation and to assure the Clemens that I had his back. Hardin highlighted an email that McNamee sent to Jim Murray, an employee at the agency that represents Clemens, in January 2007. In that email, McNamee complained about gross inaccuracies in a newspaper story that identified him as the steroids distributor. Clemens himself, on trial for allegedly lying to Congress in 2008 when he denied using steroids or human growth hormone, McNamee testified that he injected the former pitcher multiple times in 1998, 2000, and 2001. So that's the story there. And that trial continues. Nothing good's going to come out of that trial.
You just took the words right out of my mouth. There's nothing good that can happen there. Right.
I mean, seriously, what could possibly go wrong in this trial? How about everything? So, how about that?
Yeah, and it's a black eye for Major League Baseball as well. There's nothing good here.
And the new Chevy SS going to replace the Impala as the Sprint Car Cup Series in 2013.
I'm waiting for them to bring the Mustang to the Cup Series instead of just in the Nationwide Series. It is really cool, though, to see a Mustang running in the Nationwide Series, I must admit. But, yeah, I like the SS being added to Chevy's repertoire.
So that's actually in the mix. How about that? And three other manufacturers, Ford, the Fusion, the Dodge, the Charger, the Toyota Camry, have all introduced their 2013 models as NASCAR goes to a new body style for the first time since 2007, and the Car of Tomorrow hit the track. So all four cars are going to make their debut at the Daytona 500 next year.
Of course, for the most part, it's all decals anyway.
I know it's mostly decals anyway, and I mean, and let's face it, I know that you were hoping that the kind of car that you drive, the Lamborghini, would be obviously right. Selected. And what's really cool is when I was in the parking lot at the Susquehanna Valley Country Club, all the decals you had on your car. All right.
Our thanks made it look like a Lamborghini.
Our thanks to Dana O'Neill, ESPN.com, Ron Cook, Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Back with Dick Girardi tomorrow. Thanks for joining us on WKOK.
Your station for news, weather, business, and Fox Sports Radio is News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury.